Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Neil Nathan with co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum.
Welcome again to the Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. And as an extra added bonus for today, we're going to have an interview with Dr. Richie Shoemaker, who is the foremost expert on mold toxicity. In fact, Dr. Shoemaker essentially discovered it almost single-handedly, or at least he really explained to us what was going on and its importance. So let me take a moment to introduce the subject of mold toxicity by explaining how Dr. Shoemaker kind of figured this stuff out. He was a family physician working in the little town of Pocomoke, Maryland, which is on Chesapeake Bay. And back in 1997, there was a huge die-off of fish. Literally, a million fish were found dead floating in Chesapeake Bay. And the various health authorities all said, it's not really a problem, no real issues going on, nobody's getting sick, don't worry about it. But Dr. Shoemaker, who had a family practice in the area, found that literally hundreds of his patients were coming in with very odd illnesses, odd rashes, odd symptoms, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, couldn't think straight. And he had no idea what he was looking at. Happily, he had one particular patient who had severe diarrhea, and he provided the patient with a medication called cholestyramine, which is primarily used in medicine for treating cholesterol, but we do use it when people have really bad, out-of-control diarrhea. And he only gave it for the diarrhea, but to his surprise, all of the patient's other symptoms disappeared in the course of a few days. And so, being the excellent scientist that he is, Dr. Shoemaker took the time to then try cholestyramine with his other sick patients, and again, somewhat to his surprise, most of them began getting better. Again, being the superb researcher that he really is, he then went to a variety of local health experts who figured out, teeny piece by teeny piece, that what was affecting these patients was a toxin produced by an organism called Fisteria, Fiesteria, and that it was being produced because the copper that was being used as a in the feed of chickens to keep fungus away was leaking into Chesapeake Bay, changing the ecosystem and allowing the Fisteria microorganism to grow, killed the fish, and made people sick. Dr. Shoemaker then took his information and applied it to outbreaks of algae in Florida lakes, and then put two and two together and realized that, oh my God, there's other things that look just like this, particularly exposure to mold in water-damaged buildings. And so he found that when patients had a weird, wild assortment of symptoms, which otherwise made no sense, and I'll give you kind of an overview, fatigue, muscle aches and cramps, unusual ice pick or lightning bolt pain, sensitivity to bright light, tearing, blurred vision, cough, chest pain, shortness of breath, cognitive impairment, appetite swings, weight gain, numbness, tingling, often in very unusual patterns, sensitivity to static electrical shock, thirst, weakness, headache, abdominal pain, nausea, diarrhea. Does this sound like an overview of virtually everything you can imagine? Joint pain, morning sickness, mood swings, night sweats, metallic taste, etc. There's such a huge collection of symptoms that for most physicians, if someone came in complaining of most of those, the thought would be, well, it's got to be in your head. Can't possibly be a real thing that causes that. But in point of fact, mold toxicity does. So the first thing we want to bring to your attention is that mold toxicity is real, it occurs, and it's nasty. So the next thing that Dr. Shoemaker did is he began to look at patients with mold toxicity. And I want to take a moment to stress there is mold allergy, there is mold infection, and this is different. It is mold toxicity, where the mold toxins, and Dr. Shoemaker will talk more about that in a few minutes, mold toxins produce these effects by radically causing an outpouring of inflammatory cytokines in the body, which inflames every segment of the body. Most notably, it affects various areas of the brain, causing hormonal dysregulation, particularly in the area of adrenal, thyroid, sex hormones, and then it spreads out into other areas, which Dr. Shoemaker beautifully described and expressed as the biotoxin pathway. So this is what we're looking about when we talk mold toxicity. There are millions of people in this country who have varying degrees of mold toxicity and don't know it because they have never heard of it. It's a condition not yet made its way into mainstream medicine, and we think it's very important to bring it to your attention. So with these hormonal effects and dysregulations, Jacob, how do you perceive it? Because I know you've known Dr. Shoemaker's work for many years, since you originally worked in Annapolis, Maryland, not far from where he is still located.
Yep, he was right up the bay from me. And it's funny, when you describe the story about how he stumbled over the truth, it reminds me of Churchill's old saying that we often stumble over the truth, but usually manage to brush ourselves off quickly and walk away before any real harm is done, which is how most of medicine seems to work. But Drizzy's one of those guys who he has an incredible mind. He's a dogged researcher in terms of, you know, when he has something that doesn't fit, or new patterns. He's like a bulldog. He's grabbed by the neck. He won't let it go until he's figured it out. But it's an interesting thing. So I like the way you made the distinction between the fungal infections, allergies, but then the toxins. And for listeners, it's good to understand, well, why mold toxins? When mold toxins? Well, you know how humans have our border things, you know, we like to protect our territory, cats like to protect their territory, different animals do. Well, molds have the same thing. They don't care about us. We're not a threat to their territory. But when you have a bunch of different kinds of molds growing in the same building, they're going to be protecting their turf against each other. And the main way they do that is with chemical warfare. They throw things out into the environment to try to kill the mold competition. And unfortunately, some of that's not too swiftly healthy for us either. So it's when these guys are attacking each other, we become the friendly fire. We get collateral damage in that. But, you know, what I'd like to do, because a lot of the symptoms you gave are symptoms of CFS and fibro that literally can come from over 100 different things, with mold being just one of them. What kind of things? I find things like bloody nose, for example. Who have frequent bloody noses, I'm going to be thinking more the mold toxicity. What kind of things, symptoms, do you find more specific to mold, less common from other kinds of CFS and fibro?
Particularly mood swings, anxiety, depression, the things that we call paresthesias, which is numbness and tingling in weird places. In other words, when patients have numbness and tingling around their chin or their belly button or their mid portion of their back, if they go to a neurologist, they'll say, oh, you can't have numbness and tingling there because there are no nerves that go to that area. Actually, there are. The autonomic nervous system can go to virtually anywhere. So when I have patients with weird patterns of numbness and tingling, anxiety and depression completely out of proportion to what's going on in their life. But again, you're correctly pointing out many people with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia actually have mold toxicity as a component of their illness and really need to know this, to know that this needs to be incorporated into it. In fact, I'll take just a moment to comment on a paper published just last year by Dr. Joe Brewer who took 113 patients with chronic fatigue and measured mold toxicity by checking their the mold toxins in their urine, and found that 93% of those patients were loaded with mold toxin. And those patients were remarkably well treated when he began working specifically in that area. So, again, not only is this important, but that we're making breakthroughs in this area literally by the month as we learn more about what's happening with that.
Neil, let me ask, when Joe went ahead and did the study, did he use healthy controls and then compare the amount of the toxins in healthy people's urine versus CFS and fibro? Or did he just kind of use historical controls or say, well, these shouldn't be here at all?
Right.
Because we live in an environment that I think everybody is coming in contact with these things, but not everybody is as sensitive to them.
Well, there are several factors there. First of all, the answer to your question is that he used a control population, not specific to this group. But I don't think that changes the results, because I think that that information is extremely valuable and important to us in understanding what's going on here. Keep in mind that 75% of people genetically are perfectly capable of getting rid of mold toxin if it accumulates in their body, and 25% of people genetically can't. So you could have a whole family, for example, or a work environment where 75% of the people are sick and 25% of the people, I'm sorry, 25% are sick and 75% are not, which often leads them to think, well, we're fine, you're not, this has got to be in your head. And it is, doesn't work that way. This is a real, true illness. It is treatable, but only if you think of the diagnosis and then you begin to make that diagnosis.
Absolutely. It's an old saying, you can't diagnose something if you don't know that it exists. And most doctors have no clue that this is even a possibility. And Neil, I'm going to admit, Neil, you have way more experience here with this area, so I'm going to leave you to run with this.
Well, thanks, Jacob. We're beginning to work down to break, but just to take a moment to talk a little bit more about these, there are these predictable hormonal biochemical changes that the biotoxins, particularly mold, create inside the body, and they're treatable. So a couple of things which we're going to talk about later on in the show will be, okay, if we think you have this, how do we measure it? One of the things that Dr. Shoemaker realized was there's a very simple visual test you can take called a visual contrast study, in which you look at a series of black and white alternating lines of different intensity and different frequency. And that test is called visual contrast sensitivity. And you can take it on Dr. Shoemaker's website, survivingmold.com. That will give you a clue that this is happening to you. So if we combine this weird, wild, intense group of symptoms along with a history of mold exposure, meaning you can either see or smell mold in your current environment, or, as we will talk about a little bit later, if you have ever been exposed to a heavy mold infestation, you may actually become infected with mold, meaning it colonizes in the gut and sinus areas, and then will continue to produce toxin even when you have left that moldy environment. That is one of Dr. Brewer's major newer contributions, which helps us to understand how people are staying sick even long after they've left their moldy exposure. This is not an allergy. This is a toxicity, and it needs to be thought about a little bit differently. I would comment that for those listeners who would like, Dr. Shoemaker and I did a two-day symposium on biotoxin illnesses, which is available in CD form from either his website or gordonmedical.com, called Biotoxin Illnesses, the Science Behind Accurate Diagnosis and Effective Treatment. And for those who want to learn more, there's as much as you could possibly want in that two-day symposium. So let me take a few moments to thank and appreciate our sponsors for this program. So I am delighted to welcome Researched Nutritionals as one of our proud sponsors. Researched Nutritionals is famous for its specialty immune energy and detox formulations to promote healthier life and to treat our toughest patients. Known for conducting clinical research on its formulations and products, it's a favorite amongst physicians, including or especially me. I do use their products on a daily basis as a component of my treatment program. Now, specifically for mold toxicity, I'd like to highlight their product, Tri-Fortify Orange. These patients will benefit by this absorbable form of reduced glutathione. Many patients who have mold toxicity and heavy metal issues have great difficulty in being able to detoxify. And by taking glutathione, often that will improve their ability to detoxify to a great extent. So that's Tri-Fortify Orange, and it is researched nutritional. So let's go to a break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Richie Shoemaker. Dr. Shoemaker is the guy who has put mold toxicity on the planet as something that is extremely important and very overlooked in our understanding. So I just to prevent him from telling this story before I do, I first met Dr. Shoemaker in about 2005, 2006, after one of my patients who had read his book, which had just come out. That one is Mold Warriors. She read the book, came into my office, put it on my desk, and said, "Read it." And I thought, well, okay, that's great. I've got a whole pile of books to read. I'll put it on the stack. She said, "No, you're not understanding me. Read it now." She said, "I'll pay you to read it during my visit." Well, okay. So read the book, got to the point where Dr. Shoemaker is describing the biotoxin pathway, and immediately realized that Richie had brilliantly discovered the entire mechanism by which these toxins affect our health. So I was very impressed, and I called him up and said, "Richie, can I come visit with you and watch your work and see how you do this?" It was a little bit gun-shy at the point. I did not realize his history with various medical authorities, and he was a little bit like, "Who are you and why do you want to do this?" But I made it clear that I was very interested in his work, and he very nicely invited me out. I got on the first plane I could to Pocomoke, Maryland, where Dr. Shoemaker had his practice and does his research. Unfortunately, I did not know that the planes that fly from Philadelphia to the Maryland connecting airport were so filled that my luggage did not get on the plane. And when I arrived in Pocomoke, I wore what I always wear flying, jeans and a t-shirt and not much particularly else. And I arrived at his office looking very unprofessional the next morning. And he kind of raised his eye in his own humorous way and went, "Oh, so you're Dr. Nathan, is that right?" And so with a kind of a bemused smile on his face, until my luggage arrived later that morning. He very nicely introduced me to his patients and really was very nice at teaching me what he did and how he did it. So since then, we have been friends and we have been working. He has been my mentor, trying to teach me about how all this stuff works. So delighted to have him with us today on the show. I would like to for him to talk about his latest research, because it's particularly exciting in terms of what it's teaching us and where we may take this mold place to go. And his latest paper just published is Structural Brain Abnormalities in Patients with Inflammatory Illness Acquired Following Exposure to Water-Damaged Buildings, a Volumetric MRI Study Using NeuroQuant. Now, don't get intimidated by all of that. What that means is that Dr. Shoemaker has been looking at mold patients, mold toxic patients, by analyzing their brains using a variation of an MRI called a NeuroQuant. That's N-E-U-R-O, capital Q-U-A-N-T. An MRI, as you all may know, is not an actual photograph, although it looks like one. It's a computer-generated image of what body tissues look like when exposed to a very powerful magnetic field. And what the NeuroQuant does is it applies a specific program to looking at brain tissues so it can quantify how large certain brain areas are. And looking at this, Dr. Shoemaker has made some very important discoveries. So with that, and am I getting that information right, Richie?
Almost, but almost. You did a good job.
Okay. So with that intro, could you please share with our listeners what you have learned about the specifics of what mold toxicity does to brain tissues, and we can then talk about its importance and significance.
Part of the missing piece, Neil, is in the title of this paper. It is referring to people with inflammatory illness acquired following exposure to the interior of water-damaged buildings. And what that means is that when we think of wet buildings, there are some folks that automatically think that mold is our problem. Well, there are easy ways to measure molds, and we know that certain molds are associated with kinds of illnesses that we can define with inflammation markers. But there's way, way more than molds to worry about. And the whole idea is that in a wet building, there is this chemical mixture, or stew, as I like to call it, that contains fragments of molds that are dead that you'll never find growing anywhere that cause inflammation. You will find toxins from actinomycetes and compounds from bacteria that make us sick. There are other compounds that some people think might be helpful, like beta-glucans, that if they have a different structure can make us ill. But the bottom line on all of these elements, and mold toxins probably are about one in a million of the total number of culprits here, is that there is an inflammatory response the body makes to antigens, these foreign particles that we normally would recognize as foreign invaders and destroy with antibodies. But these folks have genetic makeups such that they cannot make a protective antibody. So if they're exposed to this water-damaged building, they actually will retain these compounds. They're not excreted in the urine. They're not excreted in the stool. They stay with us for a long time. And specifically, what happens is that the inflammatory response over time, slowly, steadily, progressively, makes compounds that injure the blood-brain barrier. We all know that there is a mechanism the brain has to keep compounds in the blood out of the brain. For example, if you have Parkinson's disease and you want to take L-DOPA, you've got to take a different compound and not dopamine itself. It's got to be made up in some other way because it won't cross the blood-brain barrier normally. These compounds that we see in inflammation from people in water-damaged buildings can be things like vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF, or matrix metalloproteinase in number 9, MMP9. But the big one is transforming growth factor beta 1 or TGF beta 1. These guys breach the blood-brain barrier and let elements in blood into the brain where they're not supposed to do, supposed to go. And then TGF beta 1 follows along and turns on genes in the brain that aren't supposed to be there. So what does all this do? We've known for years that, and in some of our early work published in 1998 and 1999 and back in there, showed a lot of cognitive issues with these biotoxin problems. But now, with use of the NeuroQuant, we finally can show the mechanism of injury and the injury itself, and even better, by treating the inflammation, we can watch the injury in the brain heal. So when you talk to people exposed to wet buildings and they've got brain fog and recent memory problems and confusion and can't remember where they parked their car, it's not unusual. They're not making that up, because when we can show the inflammation in the brain causing brain volume changes that then disappears with treatment and their symptoms go away, we finally got something that we can use clinically.
You know, most of our patients that are mold toxic, and I do use the mold, the word mold, as you're absolutely correctly pointing out, in a more generic term. It's many, many other things create that toxicity. Our patients are often treated by their family, friends, even many physicians, with the thought that they're making this up, because nobody could have all of the symptoms that we're looking at. And perhaps the worst of the symptoms, worse even than the fatigue and worse than some of the pain, are these cognitive and emotional issues that our patients manifest when they get sick. And so, if you don't mind the pun or the joke about this, that these patients have been told for a very long time that this is in their head. And now you are proving that it is, but not in the way that it has been used in a derogatory statement. We now can look at what's in their head from a brain standpoint and go, ah, this is very real. Look at the changes in your brain scans that clearly prove that there are shifts going on here that will explain your tendency to extreme anxiety, depression, OCD tendencies, which is unusually high in many of our patients, and cognitive issues, difficulty with brain fog, focus, memory, concentration, and all the higher functions. And for many of our patients, as I know you are very well aware, this is what scares them the most. They can live with a little fatigue, but not being able to think well is a very frightening place to come from.
One of the interesting findings on top of what you said, which is correct, is that there is also a problem of executive inhibition of response. And in speaking to patients who are untreated, who have these cognitive issues, even before we knew that they had volumetric problems in their brain, very often an interview will start, good afternoon, Mr. Jones, how are you feeling today? And Mr. Jones will start talking to you about how he's feeling, and then he sidetracks into what he had for breakfast, and then he sidetracks into, well, he doesn't eat oatmeal because it causes him GI problems, and then I think he's got parasites. And I'm going, wait a minute, this is in the first paragraph. This is not an organized, structural approach to conducting an interview. But what really is going on is that these intrusive thoughts that are coming into Mr. Jones are causing him the inability to inhibit incorporating those intrusive thoughts into what they're doing. Obviously, Mr. Jones sounds disorganized, and he is. But the issue now is that we know full well the representation of some of these abnormalities is heightened in some of the dopamine-containing fibers in a part of the brain called the caudate nucleus. And Neil, if you're like me, when I first heard of caudate nucleus problems, I went to my anatomy book and say, where in the world is a caudate? Well, it sits back right near the thalamus at the base of the brain, right next to the putamen and the pallidum. That sure tells you where it is, doesn't it? But the whole issue is the brain knows where it is, and fibers that are running from the front part of the brain and the white matter get integrated in the gray part of the brain. And the fascinating issue that we see in these biotoxin illnesses is that there is a unique area of brain volume loss in some gray matter, but other areas are bigger than normal. And this bigness is due to fluid accumulating, not that you can see on a gross basis like with an MRI, but it's on a microscopic basis. So it's fluid between cells in the brain. And it's called microscopic interstitial edema. And that combination is unique in all of what my reading shows in brain injury. But the even more unique aspect is to watch it clear. But when we've got people with funny little facial movements and jerking movements, and we call, well, you have a tick, don't you? T-I-C without the K. The answer is yes. And ticks are very common, and tremors are very common, and unusual seizure-like activity is not surprising. And when we get MRIs, we'll see a lot of scarring or unidentified bright objects, as we used to call them, and now we call it gliosis. As soon as you hear about scarring or demyelination, someone worries about MS, and geez, they're worried their brain doesn't work, they're tired all the time, now they got spots on the brain. It's like, my God, the prescription for antidepressants are not too long before they come.
Yeah, and we're going to need to go for a break in just a moment here. I would like to continue that discussion after the break, because as you are very, very beautifully pointing out, we can actually begin to see neurological brain clearly identified reasons for all of these neurological and psychological manifestations that we see with the whole biotoxin illness cascade. So thank you, Dr. Shoemaker, so far, and we're going to talk again. For the past few weeks, I've been telling you about the excellent German-made natural remedies distributed by a bioresource located locally here in Sonoma County, where I practice. One of these medication lines is manufactured by the Syntrion Company near the Black Forest in southern Germany. It includes highly effective treatments for mold toxicity and fungal overgrowth. One that I personally use a great deal is one that's called Syfungin, S-Y-F-U-N-G-I-N. It can be taken either as a nasal spray or a tablet to help reduce the fungal infections and toxic loads, especially when combined with the Picana detoxification kit. Importantly, these remedies are supported by exceptional research conducted at the Medical University in Vienna, Austria. So I recommend health practitioners find out more by contacting BioResource at 800-203-3775. Patients who are seeking practitioners who use these remedies can contact BioResource at bioresourceinc.com. We're going to go to break right now.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and I am joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Richie Shoemaker, who has been publishing the most exciting, up-to-date information on the whole process of biotoxin illness, most notably mold toxicity. And he's been sharing with us his recent work on using the type of MRI called a neuroquant to demonstrate actual brain changes with these inflammatory markers and the fact that these markers can be healed with the use of the treatment program that you have pioneered. So, Richie, if perhaps we could take a moment to talk about the product VIP, which stands for Vasoactive Intestinal Polypeptide, which you were probably the first to use in this context a number of years ago, recognizing that VIP was markedly deficient in the vast majority of our patients who have these illnesses, along with MSH. And particularly VIP, and I'm going to oversimplify it, and if you like, please expand on that. But for our listeners, VIP does many things. It is a really important neuromodulator, neuroregulator. But one of the things that it does that's of supreme importance is that it regulates inflammation in the body. And as Dr. Shoemaker is going at great lengths to clarify, it is inflammation that is the major problem in all of the myriad symptoms that we see with these illnesses. And what VIP does, in a simplified way of conceiving it, is it controls inflammation. It modulates it. And when the body does not make it in adequate amounts, inflammation rages out of control. So when we can demonstrate that VIP is deficient, Dr. Shoemaker has come up with a way of specifically figuring out which patients are the best candidates to take it, and has discovered that using VIP over a period of 6 months, sometimes more, sometimes less, can reverse these brain changes. Do I have that fairly correct, Richie?
You do, Neil. You've been reading, and I'm delighted to hear that.
Well, you're a tough taskmaster. You send me loads of papers that I try to plow through, and I do my best to understand what they mean.
One of the issues that we've got to look at in many different levels is this concept in chronic illness of inflammation gone awry. We think about inflammation with tests like SED rates and C-reactive proteins, and people have talked about that enough in public literature that I don't think we need to explain too much about those two tests. But inflammation is far more than just that. It's basically a response to an injury. And if the injury is coming from a foreign invader, the inflammation will come from the innate immune system that has the duty to recognize the foreign invader for all these different receptors that contribute to recognition sites, and then to activate antibody production. If that process is defective, and we know that there are some immune response genes associated with defects, and some research has shown why that happens in some of these genes, but specifically we don't have all the information we want, but if there is genetic makeup and innate immune activation, our thoughts about inflammation must be changed, because SED rates and C-reactive proteins invariably are normal. And the inflammation comes from cytokines and Th1 responses that are balanced by Th2 responses. But now we found out the next player is Th17 responses. And when I first started reading about Th17, I said, what happened to Th3 through 16? It looks like we jumped a few. But the issue is that as we go back to the basic concept of inflammation gone awry, we've got to go back to people like Lewis Thomas, who wrote extensively in the New England Journal of Medicine in the 70s, and back in my medical school days, he was quite the pundit, eloquent and succinct. But he recognized in one of his pieces in 1973 that in the germ, what makes us sick most of the time from illnesses, and this is true today, whether it's SARS or even perhaps HIV or any of these illnesses like Ebola, it is the host response that is not controlled that creates the illness. And the host response is not being regulated. And the model for us has been sepsis or bacteria in the bloodstream creating the storm of all these inflammatory responses. And we used to think that sepsis was just an acute event. You got the staph out of your bloodstream and sepsis stopped and cytokines went home. But that's not the case. Once this illness gets started, there can be longer-lived inflammatory markers, and the illness becomes chronic. So we call it a chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And the chronic...
If I can interrupt for a second for our listeners, what this really means is that once the body gets out of kilter, even if you cure it, even if you remove the biotoxins, the body somehow does not know how to right the ship. It kind of needs to get rebooted.
If we take Neil's reduction of what I'm saying, and what he said is right, we then ask the question, what happens if you put regulation back involved? And I'm not talking about government regulation. We don't need more of that. But specifically, if we look at folks with these chronic inflammatory response syndromes, they all need regulation restored. And unfortunately, there is an element we're just now finding out about that some of this inflammation will affect differentially gene activation or gene suppression. So this initial event, say exposure to wet building or tick bite or some illness like that, you eat some fish from a reef around Hawaii and you get sick with ciguatera, that initial inflammatory event can continually lead to new illnesses. If we think about the dominoes in a row being knocked down one after another, the final frontier is our genes, is genomics. So we can look at things like VIP and ask the question, golly, this restores inflammation from so many pathways, not just from mycotoxins, but also from bacterial toxins and spirocyclic drimanes and beta-glucans and all these other things that are not moldy that are in wet buildings. And it fixes them. But it fixes them by restoring genetic regulation, Neil. That's the key issue. And the illness persists so long as there is ongoing lack of gene regulation. And back when they had the Human Genome Project thought about being billions of dollars of expense, 98% of the DNA that was isolated didn't have a known function. It was called junk DNA. Turns out it wasn't junk, because in that junk are a whole slew of regulatory RNAs. So now when we talk about things like VIP, it will change surfaces of mucous membranes to let germs come in that make biofilms that will silently make us sick, because those guys can release substances to change our genes. VIP deficiency lets TGF-beta-1 go nuts. That'll change our genes. We'll have problems with autoimmunity. That'll change our genes. Regulatory white blood cells called lymphocytes of the T lymphocyte kind can be disturbed and plasticized and changed. That'll change our genes. And so this whole ever-expanding picture says, yes, you might have fatigue and cognitive issues, but you've got problems with neurologic function and vision, you've got proteomic or blood test abnormalities, and you've got genomic abnormalities. They all now go together.
So you have been a long advocate, long being a few years, because all of this is so new, of using the PAX gene to help gather this information, which would not only gather it more immediately, but make it available to us as we learn new things. We can go back to what we've got and study it even further. Is that correct?
It is, and I congratulate you and your group for being some of the first of my colleagues to start doing these PAX gene tubes, because it's distressingly simple to do, to collect one tube of blood. Of course, we like to have more material, you know. PhD researchers always want more material. But at any rate, if you get one or two tubes and you invert them 10 times to mix the special liquid in the tube with whole blood, it then will develop for 4 hours at room temperature, and you can put it in the freezer and keep it frozen indefinitely and go back and look to see what was going on in this patient I saw in 2008 that I never understood. And lo and behold, oh my God, look at this long non-coding RNA going nuts. No wonder he's got caudate atrophy.
And that is eventually where we're going to be going with it. Now, just for our listeners to gain more, because this is the essence of what we're trying to do on this program, the cutting edge of health and wellness today, just places that they can learn more from you. Do you have up on your website, survivingmold.com, your new papers on the NeuroQuant, and also your previous paper on the vasoactive intestinal polypeptide corrects chronic inflammatory response syndrome?
Sure do, Neil. There's actually 30 papers that people can get as a free download, not to mention really state-of-the-art comments about water damage buildings, because there really is an awful lot of nonsense out there.
Right.
It's hard to get away with it.
And I wanted to also recommend to our listeners that available also on that website is the ability to do a visual contrast test, where you can get a fairly quick read by doing a test of your vision that will help you to know both now and in the future a bit about where these toxins might be in your body. And that is available on your website as well.
There are books available, there's PowerPoints available, there's lectures available, there are modules available, whether it's taking cholestyramine or correcting some of the compounds in your nose or VIP itself. We try to make it essentially very easy for individuals to access the information and not make it so full of jargon that no one can understand it. And I think you would respect that, Neil, but nonetheless.
Of all people, I do. So I want to let patients know that it's survivingmold.com. A couple of things you might want to find there is that Dr. Shoemaker and I did do, several years ago, a day-and-a-half workshop for professionals and the public on biotoxin illness. While I grant you that that is several years old, it might serve as an introduction for many of you to begin to understand this much better, and that is available as a CD, or a set of CDs, called Biotoxin Illnesses, the Science Behind Accurate Diagnosis and Effective Treatment. And it is available both on Dr. Shoemaker's website and also at GordonMedical.com website, where we also have that available. One quick comment before we go to break. I also understand that you have a new book that's going to come out soon. Is that correct?
Yes, and thank you for asking that. This one is state-of-the-art answers to 500 mold questions, I think it's called. It's an e-book so that you don't have to go anywhere, and you can get it on your Kindle. Should be available this week or next.
Fabulous. So, Dr. Shoemaker, I just want to thank you so much for coming on our program and sharing with us what are truly the cutting-edge, newest pieces of information on this entire huge and very important field of mold toxicity. It's a pleasure, as always, talking with you, and I will hope that you can join us in future broadcasts for updating us as you continue to pioneer your work in this area.
You've been most kind. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice, and look forward to seeing you again in person sometime soon.
You've got it, Richie. Thanks.
Thanks.
And one of the oldest and best research supplement companies, which I also work with a great deal, is that of Metagenics, another of our proud sponsors. I will encourage you to go online at metagenics.com to look at their products. For mold toxicity particularly, which is a relatively newly discovered issue,
The main concern related to mold is the damage it brings to the organism, which we're kind of talking about. It's kind of like a forest fire. So after the acute fire, to rebuild the ecosystem of the forest, detoxification and what Metagenics calls the 4R program is essential. The 4R program consists of what needs to be removed, what needs to be replaced, the re-inoculation of probiotics, and does the intestinal lining need to be repaired? So looking at that conceptualization from Metagenics can provide tremendous program for helping the body heal. That's metagenics.com. And we will go to break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Neil Nathan, joined by my friend and co-host, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, and we have just had the opportunity to have a discussion with our friend and superb researcher, Dr. Richie Shoemaker. So to follow up those comments from Dr. Shoemaker, I'd like to come back to understanding mold toxicity in a somewhat more specific or practical way. So the issue then becomes, okay, how do we diagnose this? How do we figure this out? There's a number of ways of doing that. Dr. Shoemaker has a elaborate series of biochemical measurements that can be made that help to clarify the diagnosis. And these go by kind of an alphabet soup. Forgive the acronyms, but there are things like, we've talked about, VIP, MMP9, VEGF, C4A, TGF-beta-1, all things that Dr. Shoemaker mentioned as a part of his discussion. In addition, there's another test which Dr. Brewer specifically has helped to clarify the value of, done by the real-time laboratory, in which patients submit a urine sample, and we measure in it the three main mycotoxins, which are ochratoxin, aflatoxin, and trichothecene. Don't need to remember those names, but those are things that we can measure, and we can measure the amount of that in the body, so that if there is an excessive amount of any or all of those toxins in our measurements, this tells us that, yes, we are dealing with mold toxicity. One of the things that I have found particularly useful is that knowing which toxin allows me to tailor make my treatment a bit more specifically. So as Dr. Shoemaker has emphasized in his teachings over the years, cholestyramine, which is that same medication that he originally stumbled upon and realized its potential early on in the Fusarium outbreak, that same medication turns out to be a superb binder for many of these toxins, particularly ochratoxin. So if that's the one that patients have in excessive amounts, that's the ones we use. However, if patients have particularly aflatoxin or trichothecene, we have discovered that other binders like chlorella, charcoal, bentonite clay are particularly good binders for those. And using the urine test, we can monitor and check and see these levels go down as time goes on. In the same way, we can use the visual contrast test, which I talked about, as a way of monitoring and checking to see that these toxic levels are coming down. In my experience, it tends to take about a year to pull mold toxicity out of the body. Sooner if it's a simple mold toxicity problem, but if you'll recall, my practice consists largely of people who've been very sick for a very long time, some of whom have both mold and Lyme and a whole bunch of other infectious processes. So for the sicker patients, it takes longer because their bodies are a whole lot more compromised. Now, to make this a little more complicated, we have also learned that mold is a profuse secretor of what we call biofilm. Biofilm is kind of a glop that is secreted by microorganisms that protect them from the environment, meaning they're made not only by mold, but many bacterial species make it as well. So we not only have to address the fact that we want to get at the mold, but we need to get at dissolve the biofilm so we can get at the mold. As Dr. Brewer has demonstrated for many of our patients, that they don't just have mold toxin in their body, they're growing it because the mold has colonized their sinus and gut areas. So we need to incorporate, along with these binders, we need to incorporate a treatment program that will include nasal sprays that will specifically treat the mold in the sinuses. And we need to use oral medications that specifically will treat the mold in their gut. Now, everything that I said sounds fairly straightforward. Okay, Neil, we have to check our home to see if there's mold there currently. We need to use the correct binders, and we need to if it's present, we need to eradicate the mold from the gut and the sinus areas. Turns out, much, 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 much harder to do that than you might think. Because using the binders and killing the mold, both of them have the risk of increasing the toxin amounts in the body and making people worse. So we have found it to be quite tricky, requiring a great deal of intricate tweaking to find the right doses of binders and then finding the right dose and frequency of administration of the treatment so that patients can tolerate it, not be made worse, and slowly, slowly, steadily get better. But what I will say is that in some of my sickest patients with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, who I had not helped by a wide variety of other treatments that Jacob and I have alluded to over the past several weeks, many of them are now getting better for the first time. So I do think that mold toxicity is what we would call the elephant in the room. It is a huge piece of the puzzle that I'm hoping we are helping you all to understand its importance, and that you will need to find somebody who understands what they're doing to treat it.
Neil, let me ask, I'm going to ask you to teach me along with the rest of the listeners today. So we talked about several for diagnosis. Let's go back. We talked about VIP, and as we talked about with Richie, the VIP is a very helpful potential treatment. And doing the VIP blood test to see if it is indeed low, I think, can be helpful. The other things like the MMP9, VEGF, TGF1, C4A, do those really impact your decision choices? So the question, again, is how necessary those are as opposed to just looking clinically. And then for the real-time lab urine testing, are you seeing the same 93% positive that Dr. Brewer was seeing? And how long is it taking for people when you use the treatments to start seeing symptomatic relief? And I know it varies by how long they've been sick. And then for treatment, what are you using to kill the mold outside of things like silver and bismuth? I know silver and bismuth are my two favorite biofilm disruptors. I know you use the EDTA. So are you using Pepto-Bismol, to clear the biofilms in the gut, along with oral silver? Are you using anti-infectious agents?
Okay, lots of questions. Let me see if I can squeeze some answers in before it's time for us to say to bid adieu for today. But let me try to answer those questions. I get a different patient population than Dr. Shoemaker. For pure mold, his tests are all very relevant, particularly for the protocol he developed. My patients almost always also have Lyme disease, Bartonella, and other infections. And the test that he has will largely be positive for them as well. So it does not help me to distinguish between those populations. VIP is very useful in and of itself. And the only lab that does a decent job with that is a specifically ordered VIP from ARUP, which is a form of LabCorp, has to be drawn very carefully. The routine LabCorp or Quest tests are no longer of much help there.
Second, you send people to LabCorp to have it drawn?
We do it at our clinic because it isn't always done properly, even by them. Their techs don't always know the right way to do it. It just has to be done right. It's tricky. In terms of the biofilm, I use products specifically that have EDTA and other biofilm busters for the gut. My favorite product is called Interface Plus in the gut, and I do use colloidal silver in both areas. The specific treatments that I use are a specially compounded spray of amphotericin B or ketoconazole for the sinuses, and we recently, Dr. Brewer has pioneered using a new spray of nystatin that we have available for that as well. And we often use Sporinox as our primary medication for eradicating it from the gut. We find that we need stronger medications than I usually use on Candida, although these medications will obviously have a beneficial effect on those. Am I asking
what dosing are you using? What dosing are you using? Post-Boronox?
It depends. Again, with my patients, I start with tiny doses, like 100 milligrams once every 2 weeks, and I slowly ease them up until maybe I can get them to once a day. Dr. Brewer has taken it to as much as 200 milligrams of Sporinox twice a day, but I don't have any patients who can handle that very well.
Interesting. So what we're seeing is that there's more and more new hope coming in. There's so many different approaches, and the VIP seems to be offering a very powerful, very helpful kind of approach. Are you still feeling that you have to kill the bugs in the nose before you go with the VIP? I know that Paul, Dr. Cheney, is moving away from that being as critical.
Yeah. Yep. Dr. Shoemaker's original finding that the Marcons had to be addressed varies. Some physicians believe that it must be, but Dr. Shoemaker believes it must be, but also admits that it's very hard to completely eradicate, and that is less, essential than we had thought. And so I know that there's way more that we need to talk about mold. Dr. Brewer has agreed to come on to a later program with us and talk about his work as well. I'm definitely going to be looking forward to that in the future. But for right now, I hope that we have helped you understand mold toxicity, and I would like you to stay tuned for our next show, which will be on pain and wellness, appreciating the value of osteopathic manipulation. I've got some great guests next week to join Jacob and myself, two superb osteopaths. So please join us next week for our program, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Thank you all very much, and have a great, healthy, wonderful day.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan and co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.